So, honestly, this round table came out of... So, Shane and I were driving up... Shane and I were driving up from Virginia yesterday, and so we had a lot of time to talk. And one of the things that we talked about was... we were talking about how many people in the game industry really know about the game Passage, and I'd like to see a show of hands of the people here.
Sounds familiar.
All right.
That's fine. This
group self-selects.
We figured that.
Yeah. So, for those of you who don't know, it is a game that was produced in a game jam, and basically it is about the size of a banner ad, the screen, the window, and it is mechanically super simple. It has, you're a little guy, a little pixelated guy, and you sort of wander around this maze, and you can, there's treasure to be found, and you can get the treasure, and then there's also, at one point, you can get a companion, and you sort of can walk, and eventually your companion dies, and then you walk slower, and then you die, and it's a giant metaphor for life, because your companion is your significant other, and your companion always walks next to you, and that means that sometimes you can't get through, narrow passageways, and the graphics sort of change as you move to the right, if you decide to move to the right. And so it uses the language of interaction in a really interesting way to reflect sort of the choices that you make in life, right? And that's sort of, we were talking about it, and Shane called it interactive metaphor. And to me, this is like the most interesting thing we can do with games. Is we can use the, I think I see another reason why the patio was... Alright, we can use the language of the systems that we design, the level and the rules of the game, in order to say something greater about, in this case, the human condition, kind of a popular art topic, but... To really make meaning. And so we sort of talked about this and we agreed that this is hard. It's hard to design for. And honestly, I'd like to sort of open it up by asking if people have any sort of other good examples of where the interaction and the rules of the game really play into sort of saying something about the world or about art or beauty or whatever, the way a football team works. I don't really care.
So, sort of a cheap example, but I remember thinking that the demonizing way to look at Grand Theft Auto is that the ways that you can interact with the everyday person or you can chainsaw them, you can shoot them, you can run them over, or steal their car.
Yeah.
And then pretty much, like, other than that, you're, like, done. And that's how you deal with the everyday person.
Right, absolutely.
And that's really sort of a pessimistic way of looking at human interactions.
Yeah, absolutely.
On that same theme, Passage, to speak to the other point of it, there's generally a very distinct net loss if you take the partner.
You can't get to certain treasures.
Very few benefits to having that, and now maybe that's part of the designer's vision, and maybe it's not, but it conveys itself very strongly in the game that the message here is, if you attach yourself to another human being, you will have less potential, life will be less interesting, and all this other. It's a very strong message that
right. It's
you have to be careful when making the metaphors to be sure you understand what those sub-themes are and how they might come across, even if it is just because... Well, you know, I didn't want to make there be anything that, you know, I only want there to be two types of passages, one that one person can fit through and one that two can. I'm going to keep it simple. It can send an entirely different message than a game where you actually provide a benefit to that.
Well, the opposite point of that was like Ico, where you need to drag your partner around, but she's also necessary to get past certain hurdles.
Right.
So she's a burden, but she's also an enabler of greater things.
And in a bit, sort of a simplified version with Bioshock, you know, whether you harvest or you save the gal, there is in-game meaning for it. But on the other hand, you know, if you are the more sentimental type, you get the good feeling right. know, if you save them instead of just going for the hard cash.
Absolutely. I think that one of the interesting... obviously, BioShock is a game that elicited a lot of discussion. And one of the interesting discussions I saw about it was the question of, well, so there's this whole moral choice here, and if you harvest, you get more Eve, basically, you know, points. And if you don't harvest, you get fewer, but then you also get periodic gifts, so I don't remember if it works out.
It's effectively perfectly balanced.
Okay.
There's a very minor difference by the end of the game.
Right. And what you have to realize, I think what we all have to realize as people who make games, not to mention people who consume them, is that that also says something, right? The fact that they balance it out...
there's no reward for being
right.
a better person.
Right. And that's where being, like... A game designer is working against you because you're like, well, I want both choices to be viable options for the player. Like, if he wants to role play an evil character, I want him to still be able to have fun. But you end up nerfing that choice, and it means nothing.
I haven't played many other games where you know there are those moral choices in your things, but you know, Fallout had one. I think was it Fable? Yeah, like that.
Everything Peter Baldur's ever done.
Yeah, actually,
and rather him.
The problem I have with one of the games is
I've never seen one that's subtle and actually interesting.
Right.
Every single role choice I've ever had in a game is either between hug bunnies and love them or be destroyer of worlds.
Yeah, that's a BioWare
really
syndrome.
And neither one actually really
like,
works. Well, and the problem is that we don't make the middle ground interesting.
Or just none of it.
Yeah, you're
like,
just
none of it.
But that's, you're incentivized to go to one extreme or the other.
Well,
you're not incentivized to try to be like,
actually,
sometimes I should do this and sometimes I should do that.
Not quite an aligning thing, you know, use the D&D term, so much as a general attitude thing. I know Alpha Protocol, they are putting in achievements for either being a paragon of one of the personality types or just staying in the middle ground. And all of them have positive, tangible game benefits.
Right.
Yeah, Fallout 3 had that perk where
if you stay neutral,
you got speech.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's weak sauce.
I really like that one. I made sure I was neutral in my playthrough.
But also, in the designing, it's a memory cost. You know, the more options you have that have separate, separate definable things, the more memory you need to store that.
Right, yeah. Well, usually...
More importantly, it's a bigger production cost.
Yeah, production.
Question kind of on definition of terms, because when you talked about passage, what I hear there is actually the mechanics themselves are a metaphor,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the BioShock choices using unrelated mechanics the mechanics and the decision are not in any way intimately intertwined.
Yeah.
Right.
It's simply like a story reflection that the story reflects in how the system tallies. I don't know how to express that appropriately. But
yeah, well, I think that's an excellent point. I think too often we end up just being like, oh, well, we reward the choice with points, and it's just...
When I was doing experimental gameplay, at one point, I had our theme for the week was violation. And I made this little, like, Tamagotchi thing where you had, like, a little baby, and at first... So this is also very ham-handed, and I'm very well aware that it has several failings. But you had this little baby girl, and your only interaction was a hand. And you could either, like, stroke the baby's face, or you could smack the baby. And first of all, everybody smacks the baby, because that's what they do. And she gets older over time, and it's just like a little timer that now she's a toddler, now she's a teenager. And as she grows up, you have different things of interacting with her. You can give her money, you can give her the car keys, you can give her food, like, you know, whatever. You can still smack the baby. Yeah. But as you abuse her, as you do bad things to her, there's a variable under the hood called monstrosity, and she becomes more of a monster as you do these things. And like, she will physically like do things, like she grows a little tail, and by the end of it, essentially, like it's monotonically increasing. So she will always become a monster at the end. And once that happens, she comes towards the screen to try to attack you, and the only interaction you have at that point is a shotgun scope. But when you pass the scope over the monster, all you can see through the scope is the little baby that you started with. Yeah. So, very ham-handed, not subtle, but it's somewhat of a metaphor. It's kind of it's using the mechanics to reinforce a theme here. But like, outside of a little toy game like that, and Passage is also kind of a toy game, like, I wonder if there's any way to bring those sorts of ideas into a larger scale.
But then again, some people see metaphor when there isn't, like we were talking about with Lucy. I mean, Katamari. You can see it as about consumerism.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, even though the mechanic itself, you know, is not a direct, you know, you're not making a statement about consumerism unless you already have it in your mindset.
Real quick show of hands. The main room is open. We have a lot more people than even we had expected initially. So, show of hands is, do people want to move? Okay, we'll stay here.
Cheers.
The main room wasn't very good for the last one.
No, that's true.
So I think when you give players a moral choice, it's actually a one-bladed sword, wherein if you reward good or bad behavior, you're endorsing it. So if you endorse bad behavior, you are wholeheartedly endorsing immorality. However, if you endorse good behavior, the player is still really doing it because it's advantageous to them as a player, not because it's a moral choice. So if you
were to not reward either and just have, like, have the game support it, but not necessarily, you know, you're not getting achievement points for it or anything, but
right.
Then do you think the player would feel more free to just express the way they would want to be?
I do, but I think that...
Or do players need reward systems to incentivize them to do anything?
Yes.
I think you're not saying anything if you keep it completely neutral.
Well, what if you came up with... a good reward and a bad reward that equaled each other out, but like kind of
we're different
but then again, the whole idea of balancing them and making sure that they're different but balanced is a whole nother issue.
Yeah. But that is kind of what happened in BioShock then, right? Because you get the choice of either, you know, harvest, get all this Eve, make your own choices about which powers you want, or don't harvest and get periodic gifts where the contents is predetermined. You're essentially throwing yourself on the will of your benefactor there. And so I think that's actually might be a little better than we give it credit for, as far as that, yeah, they're equal, so you're not really encouraging one or another, but the whole reward they give you is itself another piece of commentary. Is it, you know, is it individualist, or are you, you know, operating on faith and that others will provide?
Yeah, did they expect the president first? Like, when you kill a little sister,
they do promise you.
Well, I mean, when you first kill the little sister, you might have expected to get the Eve from her, but you wouldn't know you had a present until after you saved her. Like,
that's
after you already made the choice not to kill
correct.
Her.
Yeah.
Oh, so you have to make the good choice, and then
you're only rewarded
after the fact.
Yeah. Right. So you already had to make the choice. You get rewarded. Like,
and they don't even really directly tie it one to one. They don't even say, like, because you saved the little sister, we're giving you this. You just get it,
but
and you're like, oh.
Well, but it's pretty clear.
I mean, I don't know. I read a lot of
gaming
websites, so I
once you get that first package, you're like, oh,
but that at least makes the first time you decide to save the little sister an actual moral choice.
Yeah. Because you're not told the consequences of making the good choice, so you're making it because you're RPing a good character.
Fallout 3 had, you know, the first real big moral choice you're presented with is, you know, do I disarm the bomb or do I nuke the town? And, you know, nuking the town is kind of, you know, the quick and easy path of the dark side, but it's, you know, and you get, and you'll still get a house. You still, you know, you'll have, at, you know, on first glance, you'll have all the same benefits as if you disarmed the bomb. But then, you know, it turns out, oh, your house is in a little bit of a harder spot to get to. It's, you lose, you know, a few pretty big quests that just end, and, you know, you lose out. For me, the big draw to go good there was that I lose out on content. Even though it's easier to go the bad way, you know, I get more stuff eventually when I go down the good side.
I think the bigger first choice you made was saving the bully's mother.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
I think that was a lot bigger.
Scott?
Yeah, so something that my wife, who is much smarter than I, said to me at one point, and I always keep coming back to, is that she said, games are really, really good at asking questions. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, like, I think ties well into this conversation, is that, all right, so if you separate, you know, game systems that act in that represent a metaphor, from we have, you know, games that tie into, like, the system is there and we're making you make consequential decisions or inconsequential, depending, right?
Yeah.
I think that if we look at a game as more of a, like, an exploration, if the game itself is being more of an exploration of a problem instead of a win-lose condition, if you make your game in such a fashion that it can be a lot easier to make that leap into metaphorical realm, either via your mechanics or just using a blanket set of mechanics and making people think about what they're doing. Because then if it's more of an exploration that you're proposing to them in general, that's like the general, that's what's on the table for them playing it,
yeah.
That leaves you in a spot where, you know, someone can say, oh, I'm not as concerned about, like, if you can get them into a spot where they're saying, I'm not concerned about what my Benny at the end of BioShock is. I'm interested in seeing what happens because I know that there's promise. They're saying that I'll get something interesting out of moving forward down a path and seeing what's there.
Yeah, so that's an excellent point. And specifically, we're talking a lot about reward systems, which is important because most games have them. But the topic that we started with of Passage, there is no reward system. You're going to die at the end.
There's a score.
Oh, there's a score.
Yeah,
there's a score.
That's a very important factor.
No,
otherwise, who's to say?
I did not find that to be terribly.
Yeah,
it's
a number you show me at the end. I don't.
In fact, I thought that one way to read that game is that the score is meaningless. And yes, you have a lower score if you get married in the game. But who gives a shit? Because it's a number on the screen.
It's really part of the commentary.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he actually has a really big write-up on what he was trying to do with it.
Right. And so one thing I'd like to say is that in Passage, I didn't give a shit about the score. I'm not saying that that's right. other people probably did. Possibly people here. And I think it actually goes to address the question of what do you care about while you're playing the game, because if all I'm doing is trying to optimize the amount of Eve I have in BioShock, then is that really an interesting moral choice?
This is what I was going to say a second ago. Why does it be about moral choices? Like, I feel like I'm missing one small part of this, which is that giving something meaning doesn't necessarily give it a moral right or wrong.
Absolutely.
Like, good or evil choice. Like, whether you get married or not, like, I mean, that's actually to me much more interesting, because there's not a right or wrong answer. So, I mean, before we go back to moral choices, are there any other examples that anyone has of meaning in games that's not, you are
good or
a
evil.
Baby killer, you know, or you are a savior? Like,
well, I mean, I guess you can talk about a game like Ico, where, like, the whole point is, like, talking about cooperation, and how do they do that? By forcing you to be connected to this other character the entire game. And I think that's a way of having gameplay mechanics, not necessarily having gameplay mechanics kind of enforce an idea that you're going along. Whereas the choice in BioShock, while, like, yes, like, that little girl has this look of terror when you're about to choose her, you know, it's cosmetic. It's really just, it comes down to, you know, how much Eve you want. But I think
I don't think you can totally ignore the cosmetics, though, because
you can't totally ignore it. But the idea of, like, if she didn't have that look of terror on her face and it was just like, are you gonna kill me or what?
Yeah,
I feel like that choice is a lot different.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Or if they weren't, like, little girls and, like,
that's one of the things that makes some of the games like Fable, and I guess Fable being, like, the big offender here, but also to a degree BioShock. The problem with those that I find is that I basically choose at the beginning of the game in any moral choice game, am I going to be the bad guy or the good guy?
And then you make that same choice over and
over. I just mean the problem with it is it's a problem to me because I'm not making interesting choices over the course of the game. Every time that there's a choice, it's really just an annoying prompt. And I can play through the game twice if I want.
Are you still good?
Kind of different stories.
Are you still good?
Yeah, I'm still good.
Are you good or evil?
I want to get the really good sword, so I'm still good.
So back in the mid-80s, Activision had a rather ambitious game, which never quite reached its promise. I can't remember the name of it, but it's supposed to represent a person going through life. And it was a simple, you know, decision model. But it fits, I think, in this because there was no reward. You just saw what happened next. Mm-hmm. And that was the big thing. And I guess that's sort of like that. The big problem, of course, was that your earlier choices really don't influence the later ones except in certain paths that are available or not. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it wasn't as rich as its promise was. But I think it might go along some of those lines that it was not completely graphic, not completely text. It was this weird combination in the middle, and you just chose things and read the results and
just proceeded.
Right. Well, so I'll get to everyone who has their hand up. I do want to make sure that we don't sort of... I think that we could have another session talking about morality, and I would like to focus specifically on the idea of the interactive metaphor of how do the game systems play into making meaning. And like Christian actually aptly said, this doesn't even necessarily have to be about morality. It can be about what is the relationship between tax and the income in SimCity say about city planning, you know?
Right. So that was actually very similar to the example I was about to say. The example I was thinking of offhand is that it's funny because I've been to several theme parks recently, and I played a lot of Roller Coaster Tycoon way back when. It's interesting because Roller Coaster Tycoon actually taught me in a very interactive, interesting manner the importance of balance. Like, I'm not going to say balance in one's life or something like that, but it taught you that, like, if you have all thrill rides, your park doesn't do too well because there's people that, you know, it only attracts a certain number of people. If there's not enough pretty scenery, people get very sick. Like, there's all these different things. So basically, for those who haven't played it, you can make giant thrill rides, you can make little like carousels, and you can create a lot of scenery. The thing is, you kind of need a lot of all three to really be successful, and it kind of in a very interesting interactive way taught me the importance of, all right, what am I kind of missing right now? Like, what am I kind of like, there's a lot of games that will like overtly tell you, like you play the Sims will tell you are lacking in friends. But the thing about Roller Coaster Tycoon that was interesting was that it was the game dynamics. It was like how much money my park is doing, how well my park is doing. I had to kind of like just take a step back and take a look and realize that like I'm skewing too much in one direction.
So it sounds like it was more meaningful because it was presented to you in the end of how is my park financially doing, rather than being like a thrill meter.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. It was like a secondary inherent thing rather than a.
All right, let's come around here.
Okay, well. Sort of sounds then like, would you say then this is all about simulators? I mean, is Passage a life simulator? I mean, we have Roller Coaster Tycoon. Then is this metaphor idea that you're discussing really about simulators? I mean, because every time there's a major national election, some website has a, be a candidate and run for president.
Right.
But depending on the politics of the site, the mechanics are different of how you get votes and what makes a successful candidate. So are we? So is it by inheritance because of the limitations of programming languages, simulators that do this?
If you're asking me this question.
No, I mean, throwing it out to the table.
Answer the question, Mike. Quit dodging.
My one sentence response is, most games that do this probably are simulators, but not good ones in the terms of fidelity to the real world. That's how I feel about it.
The same way novels, in theory, describe real-ish events, but they're...
But an excellent novel isn't one that hews very closely to what actually happens.
Right.
I just think you have to be able to project it in some manner. You have to be able to project yourself into a similar situation or project it onto your real life. It has to be some sort of mapping between... Like how you can imagine this, like not even necessarily consciously, of like, you know, into, you know, your world, be it, you know, the planet or your house or whatever. It just has to be some sort of mapping there.
Okay. I think it's
absolutely
abstract.
So what I've been thinking of here is I'm remembering something from a talk someone gave. I think it was the Postmortems Petra Kucha a while back, and at one point he mentioned breakdown of where the meaning in games into coming from the...
Can you speak up a little bit?
The meaning in games coming from the mechanics, the dynamics, and the cosmetics, basically.
Aesthetics, yeah.
Yeah,
aesthetics, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that's a little more well-known than I realized. I hadn't heard it, you know, put exactly that way before. I read Raph Koster's book where he focuses heavily on the mechanics bit, which goes well to this discussion. But the others, I think, you know, they really all three need to be, you know, you can't just focus on the mechanics because a game isn't just mechanics. You know, design goes to all three.
I guess in response to Michael's statement, I think it's less a simulation and more like an emulation of a point of view or a situation. It's an analogy.
Observations.
Observations. Yeah.
Yeah. One might say a metaphor.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm not making fun of you. I mean, and we get back to the topic.
I mean, SimEarth was built as a simulator of the Gaia theory, and it's weird because like Will Wright was very forward about, yeah, we made it because we thought the Gaia theory was kind of interesting, and so we built it to match that, but then it was sort of. It was. I think I might actually again get to properly use begging the question, because people were then using it as proof that the Gaia theory was accurate.
Oh, right.
And so it's like, well, no, it accurately reflects the simulation we tried to build. You could look at that as a form of metaphor, you know, and taking this thing that we've read about, and trying to express it in an interactive fashion that someone can. Hopefully, like we think this theory is interesting. Could you learn about it from playing this game? And you probably could.
Within that same family, you have a game like Sim Ant, where you're controlling an ant colony in not even close to the way that resembles an ant colony to operate. Like,
right.
You have Dwarf Fortress is more Sim Ant than Sim Ant was.
Yeah.
And I think that that's an interesting thing in and of itself. Like, you know, is that then supposed to be... You know, is that an analogy for human life instead of ant life? And if so, why are we controlling ants instead of humans? And I guess they
right.
fixed that when they made The Sims. But yeah,
well, The Sims was actually built as an architecture thing. Like, originally, it was supposed to be the timeless way of building.
Yeah,
and then the people were sort of the secondary thing that everybody focused on.
But yeah, and so I think that's part of the bringing it back to it's not just mechanics, because the same mechanics applied in the same concept, but with a different window dressing. Will be two completely different things, because it either gives the impression now that you have no idea how ant colonies operate, or that you are using the ants as a metaphor, and so that can be a tricky thing to do, because like you said, SimEarth, people can get it confused. This is a representation of the theory, this is not a simulation of Earth, which proves that same theory.
Right.
Well, Activision again made a less ambitious and more successful program.
Tony Hawk.
Its name again, but it was basically an early version of Tamagotchi. Which you had a person, it lived in your computer, and you could feed it, you could give it a pet dog if you wanted, could have to turn, and if it was sick, it would turn green. If it wanted something, it would go knock, knock, knock on the window screen. So I think in a sense that does sort of fit the metaphor situation, because it was, you know, someone being taken care of in a life situation, you know, represented as this computer program that you ran on your C64. Yeah.
Was this literally a person?
It was a collection
of pixels that represented a person.
It's kind of odd to me that you could get the person like a dog, and they didn't think players would rather be nurturing like a baby or a puppy or something. Because that's pretty much where it went.
Yeah, that's where it went. So this was like the pre. It wasn't like a immensely successful game.
Yeah, it's like,
because it didn't.
Man,
do
what are the things that I don't want? Some like other person like messing around in my computer.
That's right. I think that's why it probably did not become like an incredible successful program.
Whereas
people
later you get the Nintendo.
People will take care of animals, but if it's a human, they want to be in control of it and not just responsible for it.
So we sort of talked about simulation a bit here, so. The next question is why? What? To me, at least, the next question seems to be that: how do we simulations? If you play like a real crunchy simulation, usually not that effective emotionally. Oftentimes, someone will play. I mean, I know as a kid, I played SimCity, and I got an idea in my head about how cities work. Right, and I played SimEarth. I thought about, you know, the axial tilt affects the seasons and this sort of thing. But how do we turn this into compelling sort of emotional experiences?
Carefully.
Well, I think it comes to the question of reward systems. And, like, are we rewarding the player? How do we reward them? And I mean that that's why Passage worked well, because it used this reward system that we're so used to in games. It took that language and tried to use it to incentivize a set of behavior you're not used to thinking about.
It pretty much depends directly on the meaning you're trying to portray that. So like,
right. What metaphor you're attempting
exactly,
to
exactly like
right.
Like the best example I could think of, like offhand, is Mirror's Edge, because that had the metaphor, not necessarily like a meaning that was emotional, but the metaphor of like momentum. And it was totally visible in every aspect of the game. So like, but they did that through just giving as much feel to the game that reflected motion and velocity, I guess. Right. So, I
don't want to beat a dead horse, and this will also become a pun, but, so, did we already mention Shadow of the Colossus?
Yeah, we
did or didn't?
Oh, I
was going to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, is he an interesting medical game?
Huh?
Be an interesting medical game, beating a dead horse.
What I was going to say about it was, reading about the development of that, the game was pretty much completely engineered around the emotions that they wanted the player to have. And so we were talking about how we can apply metaphors to other games. However, these games, I don't think, like, at a high level were designed for the metaphors that we're kind of, like, interpreting from them, or you could say, like, less kindly imposing upon them. But
which games?
I was thinking of, like, The Sims, and, huh? I mean, I don't think that it was the first priority of the designers to say, like, this is a metaphor for something else.
I will say that I'm from a very liberal arts background, and that means that I don't give a shit about what the designers thought if I play it,
yeah.
Fair enough. And I get something out of it, but if the player's sitting there wondering, this wasn't intentional, then obviously we've done something wrong, right?
Yeah. I was just thinking about how it was an explicit design goal of Shadow of the Colossus.
Right.
I think that it was successfully implemented.
Yeah, sorry. The point of what I'm trying to say is that we also have to think about what, as people who make games, we have to think about where we are as opposed to where perhaps someone in our audience is. But I'll shut up and let other people
talk. I think
talk.
That's an interesting point, though. Because interpretation is what makes games, like, art worthy. So.
Yeah.
I was thinking about Shadow of the Colossus, and there was some movie that came out recently last year with Adam Sandler, and
yeah.
There was something about 9/11, and he was playing Shadow of the Colossus in it too.
Rain Army.
Yeah, I didn't see it, but I kept hearing about it because he was like, he was reliving 9/11 and playing Shadow of the Colossus and trying to like come to terms with it, or because you're toppling over these huge creatures.
Yeah, right.
So, but I don't know if they're applying metaphors that, especially because the designers of Shadow of the Colossus, like you talk to them and they don't have a backstory, or they're like, oh no, it just kind of worked out that way.
Yeah.
Is it connected to Ico? Sure, if you
want
to
be.
Yeah, maybe.
Uid has said that it does collect Ico. And going back to Ico, I mean, I think the mechanic of actually holding Yorda's hand in that game really provides a very strong emotional connection for the player that you just wouldn't get if, you know, if she was close enough to you, you know, she'd be fine. You know, if you leave her off the screen, she's dead in a few minutes, and you actually physically, that contact builds an emotional bond between the players in a way that's never stated in dialogue during the game. And then to have, you know, where Ico leans over an edge and grabs Yorda, pulls her across, and then to have that inverted at the climax of the game is, you know, it's really emotionally resonant. And it's something that we tried to do at MIT. We made a game called The Bridge that was examining attachment and loss to people, and pushing a tire swing was sort of our dominant mechanic there. So
I sort of find myself asking, like, what is the grounding of meaning? Like, ultimately, what gives something meaning? On action meaning, I feel like I keep coming back to the same answer, that it's relationships between people. You know, like, it's not points, it's not the fact that your city is now much bigger, is it, like, if you can frame the consequences of action in terms of the change in relationship, like, that's meaningful to people immediately, no matter how ham-handed it is. So.
I was just going to say, on Shadows of the Colossus, one of the things that I found in that design that I think does show through is a unity of design where, like, certainly they had that in mind, but then it comes across not just in the basic gameplay mechanics, but, you know, sort of lonely epic is
the
that
score.
It's everywhere.
Like,
the score,
music,
the story,
it,
there's the dialogue. Every element of the game is playing to the same message.
Yeah.
And I think it hits home, you know, that much more because everything is on message.
Along with that same point, I think that, like, how they did that was a great way they did that was because you're tackling these giant beasts, these giant problems, if you will, and the best way to tackle it is through, like, the scariest part of it. So, like, the guy with the sword... You run on the sword. The bird flies down. You jump on the bird and you fly up with it.
Yeah.
Like, it's really impressive the way they.
Hey guys, if I can interrupt a sec. So we're gonna wrap up in like 10 minutes or so, at quarter two. We're gonna, if on the way in, if you see any garbage or anything, if you just grab that, put it in a can. And then otherwise, we're going to meet over by the big table where the food was, and probably all form up and go over in a giant posse to Cambridge Brewing Company.
They're going to hate us.
Woo. So,
have we called them?
They don't take reservations.
They know we're coming, or?
Yeah, we warned them. And they said they can't put us all together, but like the place
they,
is going to be
there's no way they could.
Yeah.
Like,
it'd be a humongous outside. Table.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think a good way to do it is just have it work on two levels. Like, basically, like, kind of like the dog in Fable 2, where, like, yeah, you can get emotionally attached by the fact that it's following around with you, but also, like, there are items it gives you, and if I remember correctly, it also helps you in battle or something like that, where there's not only this emotional attachment that you're expecting people to forge with it, but also that there's also repercussions in gameplay, like in your reward system, so that if your dog actually gets killed off or actually gets hurt, you're like, you're not only thinking like, oh shit, my dog is gone. Like even the player who doesn't care about the emotional attachments, like shit, the one who found the guy who would find all my treasures is dead. Yeah. So I think having it work on two levels is a lot stronger.
Beyond Good and Evil did some interesting stuff with the companion there, because there would be times when the companion would go off and do their own thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you definitely felt that absence.
Yeah.
And even though the way the companion was helping you was usually pretty scripted of like, now we're going to solve this puzzle together.
Right.
But like when they were gone, you definitely felt alone.
Yeah.
Or what's your favorite?
Planetfall.
Planetfall.
Yeah.
All right.
Pour one out for Floyd.
It seems that... If we're talking about like how we can intentionally do metaphor in these games, then again it's going to be like being able to focus on what it is you're trying to say, and so and being able to recognize that if some element you threw in feels off, understanding why and either getting rid of it or adapting it. And then it'll all come down to, it's now become an expression. You will have to have gameplay balance, of course.
Yeah.
But now the important thing is you are saying this thing because it's your basis of it's your raison d'être of the game.
Yeah.
The reason Passage works so well is because it's so small and you can play it in 5 minutes, and it's there's not side quests, there's not, you know, an epilogue, like you're done. And yeah, so I think if you wanted to have a really clear focus metaphor, you almost have to just narrow your scope to only that.
Yeah, I could go on and on about how there are so many good games that could be great games if only they got rid of all the crap.
That's like a pretty universal algorithm. Get rid of all the crap.
Some games have nothing left.
I was thinking about the original like topic of the fact that, you know, so you're talking about, you know, game mechanics and the roles of games and how they have cramped meaning. And the thing that's kind of interesting is, to me, that I was thinking about is that you try to do it with the mechanics themselves, it's really hard now that, like the more I think about it. But the thing that's kind of interesting is that since we're working in an interactive medium, we can leverage that in a different way to create meaningful things, which is that we can and the easiest example I'll give is simply record what you have an attachment to, so we can actually relatively okay do that in some situations. Mm. If we know you have an attachment to your favorite weapon, if we know you have an attachment to your dog, we can take it away. Or we can mess with it.
Yeah.
The best example I can think of this offhand was one of the old Wing Commander games. You got to pick who your wingmen were, and at certain points in the game, they killed off one of your wingmen. The game kills it, like you go into battle and it's unavoidable. Your wingman will die. The way it picks which wingman it is whichever wingman you've used the most so far at that point in the game, they kill. So it's an extremely simple thing. You're recording a simple metric of which guy you use most, kill him off. And it's not necessarily the rules, but it's something that we can do in interactive that we can't do like in a movie.
Yeah.
Director has no clue which character. I'm like, that guy's really funny. Like, you know, like, you know, it doesn't matter. Like,
yeah, right.
No, I don't tell us.
Detecting attachments.
Well, like, I guess... going off the idea of, like, good games that could be great, like, Mirror's Edge, like, one thing I've always thought was, like, you know, how cool would it be, like, if... Because I feel like it's not about fighting in Mirror's Edge, and if they actually enforce that by, like, you know, every time you killed someone, the next time the cops come out in more lethal force.
Right.
To the point where, like, if you kept killing people, it got to the point where, like, you know, you wouldn't survive.
Right.
Because they would bring the SWAT team out every time. And, like, that would reinforce this idea of, like, this game is really about moving and not about fighting people. And I think that would be, like, an interesting way to put meaning into the game through that mechanic.
Sort of like Thief.
Yeah.
Thief, you weren't a great fighter. If you tried to fight,
you'd
get squished.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I don't know, there's a convention in games to treat like killing in particular very lightheartedly.
Yeah.
It's like just given that you're gonna shoot some folk.
I had that happen in Grand Theft Auto 4. I went and played and they told me to go down the street to pick up my cousin. And so I went outside, I'm like, I can steal a car, but and I don't think I should. But it's so easy, and I've done it so many times before. It's like, I feel bad. I steal the car. I'm like, why did I do this? I just need to go down the street.
I had a professor that admitted to a class that he had played Grand Theft Auto 3, and that even though he'd stolen the car, he was still stopping at red lights.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just, that convention didn't mean anything to him.
Yeah.
So, it's like, this is the only way for me to get a car. Therefore, it's not immoral for me to do it because it's the only way I can.
There's no shown consequences.
Right, yeah.
That's Grand Theft Auto. When you play this game, you're sort of signing up to do that.
Brand used car.
Yeah. Brand haggle with the used car dealer.
You prefaced it by saying that the games seem to treat killing very lightheartedly. My main issue is that they seem to treat it either very lightheartedly or very direly. Not really. Like, it's either like a stealthy game where if you kill anyone, you're getting exposed, and there's like, you're screwed. Like, it's like Thief or whatever. Or it's like, yeah, I just kill everyone. I just get frustrated, but I feel like there's no.
When is the last time? When's the last time you played a game where you killed someone and your friends went, that's not cool? And passed judgment on you as you're a fucking murderer.
Yeah.
Like, if you play a lot of RPGs, would they have like pop, like character, like the Mass Effect and games like that, or like any of the BioWare games, where there's like a lot of like people together, you'll frequently get secondary comments.
Yeah, but those I feel they're superficial.
It's totally a scam.
Although there's an awesome, painful, really ham-handed. Killing isn't always the answer line in Mass Effect.
Right. The thing is, like, and it's sort of simplistic because it goes back to reward system, but like players don't like being judged. I mean. I get pissed off when I don't play Brain Age for a while and the guy scolds me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck you! And I just close it. Like I don't need to be judged by a little virtual Japanese man. And like, if it was a character that I was actually connected to in the game, I think I would be that much more upset of, like, but the game told me to do this and I did the thing.
I think Dragon Age is trying to make it so, like,
but would it be the right kind of upset? Is it the upset that, like,
upset at the game?
Right.
Yeah, right.
Or upset at myself for having done this action.
Being a murderer.
Yeah. Talking scale calls you fat.
Yeah. Okay, that's hilarious.
If that were like a dog or a horse, you'd be like, oh man, I gotta lose weight.
I mean, even asks about you when other people on the console play and your profile hasn't played in a while.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, where's this guy? So tries to get your friends to pressure you to play.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, yeah.
What are you doing?
Wii Sports, where it just gets you to stand up in front of all your friends and call you obese. That's a good motivator.
Should be like, your friends should get off the scale
walk
for a moment. One person at a time.
12 step game.
No, I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, I think we're done. Thanks, everyone.